You know, spear from the Phoenician, the symbol. Okay, so gimel means camel, right? Which is why in the High Priestess you'll see that camel down there. But then I told you before, this is why I was tripping out on camel cigarettes, because it says a killing stick. But the killing stick is actually a spear. So it's interesting because there's a connection between the High Priestess and the spear. It's like he kills the fucking dragon with the priestess, in a sense.
Yes, of course.
It's just kind of, it's kind of some leapfrog, but still, it's that's kind of trippy.
Yeah,
Now, what do
no.
you, I mean, and we could also take this as the sort of Christ as the brass serpent, you know, both you see both the serpent up on the stick and Christ up on the death stick. We see the same image. And there was even like,
Well, that's from Numbers 21,
right,
you
so
know.
it's like, you know, raise up a serpent to cure the illness. I mean, yeah, you could take this any number of ways. That even, I mean, okay, the Egyptian goddess to fight off illness is this lion, is a lion-headed goddess. So of course, Osama meaning lion. And meaning king, so he's the Lion King. So we actually have the lion here. But I guess my thing was, you the piercing of the Christ with the spear. If Christ is actually a serpent, in this sense, do we take him as a sort of, I mean, no pun in, or I guess pun intended, two sides of the
Well,
same
it's,
coin. You know that.
well, it was a, you know the story, you know the score. It was the coin, had the serpent on one side and Jesus on the other. But then the part of that is that Yeheshua, or no, Messiah in Hebrew, not Jesus yet, but Messiah in Hebrew has the value of 358. And then Nehesh, which is serpent, has the same value, which happened to be the third, fourth, and fifth numbers of the Fibonacci sequence, which ties back to the tree in the garden, which can you can produce the Fibonacci sequence as shown in Pi, actually. If you watch Pi when he's sitting there in the coffee shop and then shows the spiral and he gets that out of the garden.
Yeah.
But here's something fucking weird that I'm looking at. So in the Kabbalistic text that I look at with my teacher, the pathways that emerge from Malkut to what we say as Hod and Netzach and foundation, Yesod, are taken as Shin. They say that the Hebrew letter Shin is symbolic of these pathways, particularly. What's interesting is that if you look at the Paul Foster Case tree, the European version of the attributions of the tarot cards, is that the pathway between splendor, Netzach, and Malkut is the judgment card, which is the Shin is attached to that card. And then you have Tav, obviously, of the world, and Kuf for the moon. But what's interesting is that if you look at the Gimel as being the spear from the Phoenician, she connects the crown of Keter to Tiferet, beauty. But that line actually is a line that leads through temperance from beauty, which is Sagittarius, which is our
Yes.
bowman, connects through Yesod into that trident. So technically, you have this trident that starts with the first part of the stick is actually Gimel emerging from the crown to the heart, and then through to the genitals and the tip, the head, if you will, as the trident here at the bottom that connects the tree. But what's interesting is that if you were to think about folding the tree into itself from Malkut into Tiferet, you're basically turning the weapon around on itself, which is interesting because the symbology of Scorpio is always like that. The idea of Scorpio is the fact that a scorpion will actually kill itself if it's cornered from all sides, which gives us our king having no place left to go. It's like, and then the suicide king
Exactly. Thank you. Yes.
to fold the tree into itself to produce the star is actually a suicide in a
Yeah,
way.
that's the Suicide King. And you know, you look even so the Sagittarius, the bowman, is aiming at galactic center, the heart of the galaxy. Now, Isa was another name for Jesus, and also means heart. So basically what you have of Jesus being speared on the cross is basically the arrow going through the heart. So if the spear is the high priestess, is the feminine, the divine feminine, it's basically the divine feminine is piercing your heart. And of course we look at this as Christ being the Son, S-O-N or S-U-N, it's set the controls for the heart of the Son.
Right. If you look at the art that depicts the spear, right, isn't that his abdomen that gets stabbed?
Right, I think it's actually his liver, which connects
him
to Prometheus.
If it's his abdomen, so if you're looking at the tree, the places where they rule are actually like if you were to step into the tree, like the looking glass. So I feel like it's the left side that he gets struck at, which would be Hod, which would be in the European correspondence as Venus. But what's interesting is that he is Mercury. He is the messenger as Jesus,
as the serpent,
which repeats
on the cross,
again.
Yeah.
Totally. He's the fucking Quicksilver messenger service who's just here to give the knowledge, but then is punished for it, just like the serpent in the garden is crushed
just
underfoot.
Just like Prometheus, who has his liver picked out for bringing the fire to man. And, of course, the serpent brings knowledge to man. It's all the same thing. It's like being punished for giving the gift to man.
Oh, so here's something. The Mars in the old system, according to Ramak, who is Israel Regardé's secret distributor of information, he equates Hod with Mars. And so you have this Venus being put in the placement, but then Jesus, technically, as Mercury, gets stabbed as Mars, chakral.
And, of course, Mars is Aries, or the Aryans, right? And it's the old idea that the Nazis were after the Spear of Destiny, which was the spear that pierced Christ. It's the same idea. It's like, whereas the King Arthur was looking for the Holy Grail, which is the feminine receptive of Jesus' blood from the spear wound, we have the Aryans, the Aries, Mars, looking for the spear, the phallic, the male, the penetrative. I also consider that if he's being pierced in the liver, if we're equating him with Prometheus in this case, Prometheus bringing the fire, the torchbearer, this is why the Statue of Liberty is Statue of Liberty, S-O-L, is soul. So the soul, sun, as the firebringer.
Wow, so this is a trip. So severity, Gevura, is equated nowadays with Mars, whereas it used to be the sun. And now what is the sun now is Mercury. But what's weird is that Netzach and Hod are actually an example of something that's completely switched. So, oh no, never mind. Netzach was Venus. So Venus is Hod. But yeah, no, this is true. Oh, no. Now we say it's Mercury. So we take it as Mercury now. That's so weird. Anyways, this is a weird thing to fucking follow, is all the implications of the correspondences. But Mars being Hod, Venus being Netzach, now Hod is Venus, and Netzach is Mars. Oh, no, Netzach is Mercury.
So
anyway,
I'm curious
whatever.
Why you wrote here, Hod is the eight ball, because we had actually, when we did the cover for Andras Jones's book, Accidental Initiations, which we referred to as AI, going back to AI again, for the cover there, I had actually suggested, because he does a show called Radio 8 Ball, he wanted to depict the tree, and I had actually suggested putting the 8 ball as Da'ath. So if you look on the cover to AI, actually has the billiard ball on the tree.
I like that. I saw the image. And I didn't write that out of any secure foundation in what I was writing. I just was looking at the tree in the back of Magic Without Tears, And for some reason, I had never looked upon the Sphero as billiard balls. Just because the way he diagrams it here, he has the numbers within smaller circles in the center of the Sphero. And it just, and, you know, I used to play 8-9 ball a lot. And I just saw how you rack the 9 ball all of a sudden. And with all the imagery of the pool table in Kubrick and referencing that to the pool of Malkuth and the Deadpool, everything clicked on that.
Blavatsky refers to the tree that there's a substitute tree, which is the dying tree. She has the tree of life and then acknowledges this whole dying tree, which I haven't seen elsewhere very much, other than if you want to acknowledge the idea of the backside of the tree, which is there's a whole other set of, like, that they equate it with Lilith at the top as Keter, and then they equate all these different demons with the tree, like they've taken over the tree. But what's weird is that Kenneth Grant, the guy who's basically taken over the OTO now, he's like, that's his whole obsession. They don't even fucking, they go into that way more than they go into the actual Tree of Life. So that's kind of weird. It's like they're Deadpool. It's interesting too, I'm looking at the same diagram as you're talking about in the back of Magic Without Tears, and the way that the Ain Soph, if you look at the circles, the way it's 0 and then 0, 0 and then 0, 0, 0 as Ain Soph are, you know. Kind of weird.
Yeah.
On a roulette table, how many options are there?
Forget.
Because when you said zero and double zero made me think of roulette.
Right, which makes me think of Run Lola Run, which is another Lamed Lamed attached to Lilith.
Well, in the dartboard, if you miss, you get a zero, and then you get, if you hit that little metal part in the dart, you hit the board, but it doesn't go in, you have a double zero. I was thinking of that, but I think roulette is 36 and a double zero. If I know my gambology.
You could wiki it.
On it, you're right. Already on it.
Orion.
Do you know the first? Can I just tell you guys a quick story? I told you about getting lottery numbers from Sirius, but I never told you my roulette story. Okay, as a young boy, I remember going with my mom and her boyfriend to, I don't remember. Like, somehow they were talking about roulette. I don't remember where we went somewhere, and like they, as like a game prize, we won like a roulette wheel and like a little game set for the house, whatever. So I remember watching them play and just sort of looking at it and find it mildly fascinating. And I kept saying, since I was a young boy, I kept saying, on my 21st birthday, I'm going to go to Atlantic City, which is in New Jersey. It's like a few hours away from New York City. And it's like a big gambling center. And I kept saying, on my 21st birthday, when I'm old enough to gamble, I'm going to go to Atlantic City and I'm going to play the number 14. Which, of course, now I associate 14 with Osiris and all that sort of stuff. Just at the time, I kept saying, on my 21st birthday, I'm going to go to Atlantic City. I'm going to go to play roulette. And I'm going to play the number 14. Okay, whatever. I kept saying that. 21st birthday comes, and my brother says, hey, man, I'm going to take you to Atlantic City. I say, okay, cool. We drive through the night, go down to Atlantic City. We walk into Caesar's Palace. So here's your king kill. We go into Caesar's Palace, walk up to a roulette table, and I'm like, okay, so, you know, I ask them, how do I play? And they're like, okay, you know, minimum bet, $15, put the chips down, whatever. So, okay, here's $15, blah, blah, blah. Put it down at number 14. The wheel spins. I win $500-something.
Jesus
and
Christ.
I take my 500, whatever it was, $525 or something, and I just turn to my brother and I go, okay, let's go home. And he's like, we just got here. And I'm like, beautiful. No, that was the whole point. Like, I knew as a young boy, I could go there on my 21st birthday, play number 14. That's it. I came, I did what I had to do.
Well, that's you have twisted, more man. Sync around winning like these things that... wow, that's weird. We watched the end of Good Will Hunting last night, and there's this whole part where Robin Williams is telling the other professor that he's got a lottery ticket, and then they're debating on the probability of actually winning after all this stuff. And it's like, it's interesting, like mathematicians take on it, because there's also the idea, and it contrasted the next one we watched with Carl Jung and Freud arguing, because Freud doesn't want to bring in any mysticism, and that's like his whole emphasis, that he wants to stay as scientific as possible. And then Carl Jung, who's taking over the psychoanalytical world, is like all about the mysticism side, and he's acknowledging synchronicity and coincidence, and Freud is completely against that. And it kind of reminded me of the two different characters in Good Will Hunting, the one who's like totally like, I got the lottery ticket, you know, and the other guy who's like, do you know the probability of blah 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 blah, the possibility of actually getting through an asteroid field is approximately 99,642 to 1, and he's like, you know, never tell me the odds.
Yeah,
you know?
Let me tell you something. We talked last week about tattoos. I'll guess I'll continue my story briefly, is to say, about 2 years later, I met this girl, and we had been talking, and so I never went back to Atlantic City. I just, you know, won my money that day on my 21st birthday. So I think like 2 years later, I met this girl. We'd been hanging out a little bit, and we were just to go, like, one of our first quasi-date things was to go hang out with these friends. And then at the last minute, these friends cancel. And actually, I think that's what's funny, is we were supposed to go play pool. So we were going to go shoot billiards, right? And they cancel. And I'm like, so I look at her and like, so what should we do now? And I was like, I don't know. And as a joke, I say, you know, let's try and go down to Atlantic City. And we catch like the midnight bus, last bus out of New York, going down to Atlantic City. And we're just totally, like, barely know this girl. Just get on a bus and go. I have, like, no money in my pocket. I had, like, fucking, like, $25 or something. And I was just like, how am I going to do this? I just invited this girl. You know, we need probably need a hotel, or we need a... Like, I have no money to gamble. I don't even know what the fuck I'm doing. So I just get on this bus and go. And we go down there. And so she says, oh, I've never played before. I said, yeah. So what I do is I walk into Caesar's Palace, go back to the exact same table where I'd won on my 21st birthday, and I say, I'll show you how to play. So I pull out, you know, whatever it was, $15, barely, you know, that's most of the money I had in my pocket. I don't know what I would have done if I lost. And I said, I'll show you how I did it. So I said, I was here like 2 years ago, and I came and I played, and I don't remember what the number I picked this time, but I put the money down, and the wheel spins, and I win $500-something. And I'm like, okay, good, let's go. Now we have money to spend.
Get the fuck out of here.
I want you to know, I didn't play roulette again for like 2 years.
You're two for fucking
Dude,
two, man.
I was 3 for 3, because then we didn't play again. We just left and used that money to like get a hotel room and hang out and whatever. And we hung out for like a whole weekend. And then a few years later, my brother asked me if I wanted to go to a casino in Connecticut, and I said okay. So me and this girl go again. Bear in mind, I have like barely any money in my pocket, and I was just like, "All right, fuck, let's just go and hang out." And we go up there, and this is the same girl who I was with the second time I won. And I turn to her and I say, "Listen, I only got $25 in my pocket. The roulette here was a $25 minimum," and I said, I have $25 in my pocket. Let's try one spin. You pick the number. It's my money. You pick the number. If we win, we'll split it. We put the money down. She picked the number 27. The wheel spins. It came out. We won $975. And we just walked back to my
Jesus.
Brother and we're like, all right, we're good. So I did the permutations to figure out winning roulette 3 times in a row. And it's some crazy number. And I was actually going to get that number tattooed on me, because it just seemed like the craziest, like the odds of winning 3 times in a row. Just to let you know, I got greedy, and the year after that, I went to Las Vegas. And I'm like, come on, I've won 3 times in a row. We're going to Vegas, man. I went to Vegas. I didn't win a fucking thing. I lost a ton of money, and I just went home with my tail between my legs. So, you know, just as the moral of the story is, you know, take the gift from the universe when it comes.
Lust of result, man.
Yeah. So, but three for three. Pretty incredible.
That is incredible. I'd change my fucking name to Green if that happened, man. That's fucking sick. And I believe you, man. I fucking believe you. It's like, no one should believe that story.
I hope people
no one should believe that story, but I fucking believe you.
That's why, like, on my blog when I talked about the lottery numbers from Sirius, like, I put the photograph of the lottery ticket on my blog with a link to the results from the lottery website. Like, hey, listen, you know, I know that I guess I take for granted that people just accept that I'm an honest guy, but yeah, this is no joke. I mean, this is like,
I mean, to have the payout is incredible, but anyone who what do you even call it? I mean, I don't think I've ever been big on recording syncs that happen. And at a certain point, it just overwhelms. And then it just, like I said, it becomes like bird watching. It happens and you go, oh, there it is, right up there in that tree. You know what I mean? You just stop cataloging them and it just becomes part of the fabric of the world that you live in. But the roulette, man, fuck, man, that's... And pretty good situations for them to happen in, man.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, even I'll be... to put everything out on the table, I mean, when I won that lottery ticket on March 17th, bear in mind, I don't really gamble. Like, when I say I went once and then I didn't go again for 2 years, I don't play lottery. Like, so I was when that happened, I had worked at this place where they got a lottery machine and everyone at my job was playing lotto every day. And I just kept saying, you fucking suckers. Why are you throwing your money away? So it was this thing where everyone, like, I, you know, it was like that I was the judgmental one of, like, that people were throwing their money away. But I just kept watching these people gamble and gamble and gamble and not win anything. And I was like, you fucking suckers. And then just one day, it's something like these numbers jump into my head and I play and I win. And everyone's like, I thought you didn't believe in gambling. I'm like, I didn't say I didn't believe in gambling. I just said that you were throwing your money away.
You know, this conversation started, me and Bill talking about Fear and Loathing,
right,
in Las Vegas. And I was actually visualizing, as we were talking, the particular scene of him walking through the casino at, what was it, 3 a.m. And he's like, they look like used car dealers from Dallas. And sweet Jesus, there's a hell of a lot of them at 3 you know, still humping the American dream. I thought that image of the big winner emerging some last minute from some pre-dawn chaos in a stale Vegas casino, you know, and then the whole thing of how he spins the wheel, he's all spinning the wheel, make me rich, make me very rich. And then, oh, and then he loses and he's like, oh, and then he's like, oh, calm down, learn to enjoy losing. And how, in many ways, the whole story in the first place is that we're emerging from a big wave that was the 1960s, and how there's this idea of the wave slipping away, and how people who were there in the midst of the 60s have this kind of, like, disillusionment and disempowerment from seeing their high go down like that, and how... For them, it feels like this total tragedy. Yet there's, like, the notion of, like, the birth of tragedy that when we used to go to these plays back in Greece, you know, the tragedies, we would develop a different relationship with the tragedies, with how they're communicated by the satyrs and our whole participation, and realizing that a lot of it is due to our interpretation, how we're going to perceive this as a tragedy. And so that film, in a way, is like a Greek tragedy, in the same way that, like, The Shining is, how you're looking at something that's just, like, going to chaos. Meanwhile, there's something there in the midst of it that's open to re-evaluation, you know?
Sure, I mean, and I just want to make the point is that when I was trying to say about the lottery win was that I had no idea how I was going to pay rent that month. Like, that's why, even though I got these numbers in my head, I only played 50 cents. Like, I was shit-ass poor. Like, I had no idea I was going to pay my bills. And so I do think of it as a gift. And, you know, not just like a gift I have, but like as a gift of thank you, I needed this right now. And it was only when I thought, you know, going to Vegas of like, hey, fuck this. I got this. I've won, you know, I'm the roulette master here. And I went to Vegas and lost. And but it just it humbled me, but not in a bad way. Like, this was a tragedy that I learned from, of like, when you say learn to accept losing, is like to learn that, like, yeah, this isn't just like a free ride. It's just like, hey, this is an awesome thing, and appreciate it for being an awesome thing. You know, I'm not, I mean, you guys have spoken to me every week for the last 7 weeks. You know, I'm not the most enlightened guy in the universe or anything, but I took that all those really profound experiences, I took very much to heart. And
that's just what we'd expect to hear from the most enlightened guy in the universe.
Well, but you get what I'm saying. It was like those lessons I really took to heart. It was like, okay, this was both winning and losing were lessons for me.
So there was, I got stuck in Vegas one time for like 15 hours when I was trying to take a Greyhound. I forget where I was going. It may have been Arizona, but I was stuck in Vegas, and I don't like Vegas, and I didn't want to gamble or anything, so I ended up spending most of my time in the fucking Greyhound station. And there was this guy who I talked to for like hours and hours and hours, who basically, I'll try and make this as short as possible. He worked his whole adult life at a church in some fucking town in the middle of nowhere, right? And he made his money through the church, and he was a church man. And at one point, he revealed to one of the priests or whatever, ministers or what have you, at the church, that he watched pornography. And this man excommunicated him from the church for it. And this was like his whole life. And this guy had like 3 kids and a wife, and this was his whole, he'd never really done anything else. And he couldn't bring himself to tell his family that he'd been fucking excommunicated from the church, which was the center of his whole existence.
Particularly
and
for
so
watching pornography.
He, for watching fucking porn, dude. And then he basically pretended to go to work every day, which was at the church, for a while, and ended up losing all this money. And he like panicked that he didn't know what he was going to do. And so he went to Vegas, and ended up losing the car that he went there with, and put himself into crazy debt. He was going to try and win back the money he had lost, and instead lost like 3 times as much, and including the fucking family car. And so he was just like, I met this guy while he was in the space of just being, that was as low as I, you know,
well,
and that's pretty low, you know?
Well, and, we opened up this, sorry, keep going, Dave.
Oh, sure. That's it. That was just basically, it was just my energetic with this guy that had a really big impact on me. I thought about that for a long time, like, you know.
Well, we opened up this talking about the pleasure principle being the same as the death principle, right? The death instinct,
mm-hmm.
to be more accurate. And I always remember this one story about this guy who had a barber shop, and he cut hair for, you know, 40 years or whatever. And he finally saved up enough money, and he was going to move to Vegas, right? So he has his last week, and people give him a few extra dollars, and he's going to go retire, and he's just going to live in Vegas where there's no winter, and it's going to be nice weather. And the story goes is that he sold, you know, everything else he had. He sold his apartment, whatever. He took all his money. He goes to Vegas, and he's dead within 2 weeks. And he had talked about moving to Vegas for years and years and years, that was his dream, that he was going to live out there, and it was just going to be exciting, and that was going to be, but I think he knew that he was going to save up all his money and just throw it all on trying to land the big one, you know what I mean? Because he probably wasn't worth all that amount of money, and it was sort of like, I'm either going to win $1 million or I'm going to be dead in 2 weeks. And he probably was fine with either result because it was the same exact result for him ultimately. And I just, that story is, it used to haunt me as something just terrifyingly tragic, but maybe it really isn't that tragic in the end. It's almost as if he lived his whole life working for one wish and his wish was granted. And he was, I lost. I'll learn something from it. You know, I'm dead. I think he even hung himself or something. It was pretty gruesome to hear that story years ago. But I don't know. Vegas, it's a place I said I'll never go to because I don't think I'll ever. It's a place that I would go to with the explicit desire to never come home from. And that only means one of two things, you know. It's a place where you go to, well, at least for a personality, an addictive personality like me, is if I was going to Vegas, it would be there to win or lose. And there's no coming back from the ultimate win or the ultimate loss. Pretty dark shit, I guess.
Yeah. So I didn't... I think luckily I obviously have a very positive story, but I definitely see that being the overwhelming scenario. And
it's the tip, right? It's the tip of the death instinct pleasure principle. It's the genital of America. It's the place where you can, you know for certain you're going to get off either in either of the two directions, but because really it's the same direction. Gamblers like to lose just as much as they like to win. It all ties into that theory. And ultimately,
well, it's that the ego's aims, he's like always ahead of himself, and he doesn't want to know that. It's because the way consciousness works is if something's subconscious, it means it's subconscious, you know. So in the midst of our strivings, it also wants to end itself, which brings us back to the ultimate energetic of the tree, is that its ending is its perfection. So it's like the Crowley thing, death will be the crown of all, you know, which is really appropriate considering that it's Keter who basically folds itself back and recedes into Tiferet, to crosses itself across the abyss to hit itself. So, you know, it's like a collision from all sides. That's like, you know, it's folding back into itself. And so that in itself is the death instinct on one level. And it's also the pleasure principle because it's from Malkuth as well, which is basically wanting to return the energy back to the source instead of distributing it out into the nothing, you know. And when you distribute it out into the nothing, you end up with infinite forms. You end up with infinite expressions and creation. So it's a tricky business. It's like that whole Buddhist thing where they say, no, you don't go into the light, you turn away from the light. And which is what Keter in this case would actually be doing in terms of the Ein Sof. We always go into the light. We're like moths, you know. The moths and atheists are divine and dying, you know. It's like we're perpetually drawn into rebirth, whereas the path of the initiate is the one away from rebirth, which is our, goes against all of our instincts, which is why it's referred to by Patanjali as involution. That's how they take involution. Though there's different ways that it's defined, that's the yogic idea, is that you're involuting yourself is to move away from the instinct to evolve. So, which is like divide and conquer, right?
Yeah.
So splitting the tree is to divide and conquer, whereas to fold the tree back into itself is basically to fold your cards.
I like that. You got to know when to fold them.
Fold the tarot.
Have you considered that another name, another version of Adam Kadmon is Adam Harishan? Harishan? Or like Harrison? And it's something I was thinking about watching Twin Peaks is that there's the one-armed man, and Harrison Ford in The Fugitive was chasing after the one-armed man. What do they call a slot? A slot machine is a one-armed bandit.
One-armed.
And of course, totally. And you have your Tommy Lee Jones
exactly.
chasing Harrison Ford, who's Janus.
Yeah, exactly. And what are you hoping on your one-armed bandit will come up? But 777. You're hoping to get the lightning flash of the tree.
Ooh, and the fucking two-sided coin where we get the word dollar from the German actually pictured the serpent on one side on the stick from Numbers 21. And then Jesus on the other. So you have this two-sided meaning where you're like, and be ye as wise as serpents, right? Mm-hmm. That's fucking weird in terms of Janus.
Right. You're going to, like, when Bill said you're either going to end up a poor man or a king, you're going to get one side of that coin. Maybe, and again, just as with chess, maybe the way to win is to not play. You have the third side of the coin.
They say the most addictive thing in the planet is gambling on sports. That, in all these places of addiction where they cure people of cocaine habits, heroin habits, drinking, smoking, that betting on sports is an addiction that they just, it's almost goddamn impossible to crack. And I think because you use a part of your brain that is a higher element of consciousness. You know what I mean? Because the aha moments of sports gambling and the payoffs, it's surreal, to look into a contest and just know that I'm going to put 10 grand on it and double my money because it's just like taking candy from a baby. Vegas is just, it's just a land of, it's amazing that the language that people use to describe how they approach the way that they work when they go to Vegas. I mean, these systems that people devise and the numbers that they play, I mean, they might as well be, we might as well be, gambling junkies. If you could confuse the language, just a little tweak here. I mean, they have their systems, they have their books.
Don't you always double down?
Well, the term for being a bookie is you're running numbers, and we keep pointing back to this biblical section called Numbers, right? So you're running numbers is to be the serpent or the Christ on the cross. Bill, you're talking about this sports gambling and the systems that are devised. I have a proposal. Maybe for next week we can watch Stanley Kubrick's The Killing.
Dude, I'm typing it in as we I was gotten to kill and I was about to type ing and you're like, we could watch Stanley Kubrick's The Killing.
Well, then I think it's settled.
Which is the original Pulp Fiction if you look at the way that it's shot in terms of the time. There's something that's coming up right now in terms of the fallus. So the word fool from Latin means bellows, right? Which is the tool that you use to start a fire. Fool is attributed to Aleph, right? Which is the letter that was removed if you want to take truth and just leave it as death. If you take the Aleph away, right? Well, the Aleph is the life breath, right? Which is what's used to fuel the fire. And the fire is the spark of life, but the fire is Shin. So the error letter is Aleph and then Shin, which is the end of the trident. Right, which is in the center of Yeheshua in Yod Heh Vav Heh as Jesus, right? So there's this really weird thing with fool as phallus, which is currency. They come from the same etymological place, right? And then the fact that the fool as Heath Ledger, the suicide King Ledger, once you step off from that ledger, my friend, is as Jack Nicholson plays the Joker, he plays Jack. Right, which is the Batman,
and Ledger is a book, The Easy Rider. Jack Nicholson as the Joker, Heath Ledger. There you go.
Totally. And so he throws the money out to the crowd, and the crowd greedily takes the phallus, which is the fool, and it's the fool throwing the money. It's just layered in meaning, right? And then he gasses them, and they're all choking, and they're trying to get their breath back, right, from this toxic stuff that's coming out of the giant blow up animals and shit, you know. But then Heath Ledger as the Joker burns the pyramid of money and proceeds to say everything burns. Now, what do you use to, what does the fire do? But it takes in oxygen and it lights everything up. Okay. Lilith, right? The word Lilith is derived from the Sumerian word, what is it, Lila or whatever, that means wind. And she is a succubus who sucks air. Like, if you've ever seen Cat's Eye and with
Did
Drew Barrymore
Lila?
And fucking succubus trying to take her breath, that's like what Lilith is. And it's also the shell or the husk being the leader of the Lila? I think
because on Futurama, Leela, which they actually do a Hal version, Leela is a Cyclops, going back to Hal and the Odysseus and the Island of Cyclops.
Ahmed. And so it's still, I mean, that's our whole trip right now, is you have Lola, Lolita, Dolores, all these things are the Lamed. And so it's just, it's very strange because she's the wind. So you have Full Metal Jacket, which is the shell, which reminds one of the Kleepo. And they say in Vietnam, the wind doesn't blow, it sucks. And then she's she means wind. And so and then also taken as night from Layla, which is what they used to think it was from the Hebrew. And then they found out it was the Sumerian. And that's what the consensus agreement that's made now of the name. But it's just, there's levels to that in terms of the suffocation, the fact that Heath Ledger, the way that he dies in Dr. Parnassus, is by being the hanged man, right, who's suffocated and he's not able to breathe. And the fact that the succubus is related to sleep paralysis, which I had for fucking years. And actually, whenever I sleep on my back, I go into lucid sleep paralysis. It's just something that happens with me. And my breathing gets way restricted, which is a symptom of sleep paralysis. And that's why they say children and infants and stuff, and sometimes older people will die from sleep paralysis because it constricts their breathing. And the succubus is often shown sitting on the chest of a person lying on their back, basically it's taking their breath away. And this is the symbolism of Lilith, who's born out of the flaming sword in the garden that protects the tree of life. That's what she came out of. And then the word sword, the symbol of the sword, relates to the Hebrew letter Zion, which is what basically rules the lover's card in tarot. And so it was an interesting, that was what brought me to see what adjustment with the sword downward look like on the lovers, which looks like it's splitting up the lovers, which would be dividing the tree. It'd be dividing the Shekinah from the Ze'er and thus creating the tree of life.
In 2001, doesn't Hal cut Frank Poole's oxygen supply? Now,
yes.
In this episode of Futurama with Leela and Fry in the Hal spoof, the voice of the Hal parody is voiced by Sigourney Weaver.
No fucking.
And of course, the whole thing takes place.
Ripley, believe it or not, get it?
What?
Ripley's Believe
yes,
It or Not.
Yes.
She's Ripley and fucking Alien.
So there you have your Athena as the Weaver. Right, Bill just said Lilo and Stitch. The Weaver is the Stitch. A Stitch in Time saves 9.
Oh, God. Dark Side of the Loom.
Yeah. So, if I recall, so this episode, it takes place around Valentine's Day, which, of course, Valentine's Day we often associate with the arrow through the heart, going back there. And if I recall, the episode ends with them creating an image of that, of the arrow through the heart.
Oh, you know, the Ace of Swords in the Rider deck picture. Oh, no. It's the Three of Swords. Picture is the Three Swords.
Correct.
In the heart, which was saying to go beyond the concept. And when the intelligence reaches a point where it pierces you on an emotional level, And actually the three obviously corresponds to Bina, which is when the archetype produced in Chokhmah is delivered to the receptive principle. So you have the will and the receptivity. The will produces the archetype, the receptivity receives it and distributes it.
Okay, wait, I'm reading to you. I want to read to you. Bender offers to merge his programming with the ship to distract it while Leela tries shutting down the ship's brains. This is all 2001 parody. While Fry and Leela are in the brain room, Fry continues looking for the ultimate heartline while Leela is busy shutting down the ship's brain. As Fry is searching, he notices that Leela's oxygen is running out. Unaware of the situation, Leela ignores Fry, thinking he is trying to give her a conversation heart. Fry secretly plugs his oxygen supply into Leela's helmet. Meanwhile, blah, blah, blah. Leela succeeds in shutting down the computer, which brings life support and gravity back online. This also stops the ship from flying into the quasar. Leela, cautiously optimistic, speaks to Fry, who does not respond. She discovers that he sacrificed his own oxygen for her. She attempts to resuscitate Fry, who has lost consciousness. While pounding on his chest to make him breathe, Fry coughs up the candy heart he has been searching for. Quote, "You leave me breathless."
Oh, snap, Lilith. Wow. Wow. So at one point, I went to a comic book store here in town, and the one of the writers for Futurama was doing a book signing that no one fucking showed up to. And I had this opportunity. This was like 6 years ago or something, to talk to this guy. And I immediately asked him about the episode of where Bender is floating in space and sees God. And there's this thing that's stuck in my mind that God says, they actually say it twice in the cartoon, says it at the beginning and then it says it at the very end. God is a constellation and or a group of star clusters. And as he talks, different star clusters light up. And he says to Bender, he says, you know, if you do something perfect, people won't be sure you've done anything at all. And I told him, I was like, dude, this had a huge effect on me, which it did. I tripped out on that for like a long time in terms of like the law of compensation. So when things cancel out, there's the appearance of static. When everything is completely compensated, there's nowhere to go, which in a sense is like in chess, when the king gets surrounded, there's nowhere left for him to go because any way that you go is there's no possibility. So I was expressing that to him, and I said, do you guys study like occult stuff or philosophical stuff? And he was like, we study everything, but when it comes to what they will allow, we have to be clever and careful with how we put things out there. And this is like the writer of that episode, or one of the writers of that episode that I was talking to. He was like super stoked. He was like, dude, you know, I didn't even say dude, but he was like, acknowledged that he appreciated that I got something out of it. He was like, wow, you know, because I guess a lot of people just watch that to distract themselves, you know, and he was like, yeah, we put that in there, you know. So what is God going to say, you know, other than if you do something perfect, people won't be sure you've done anything at all.
That's a great story, man. Because, you know, Matt Groening, who created The Simpsons, he created Futurama, right?
Yes.
So his comic strip, Life in Hell, right? Did you ever read any of that?
Oh, with the bunnies. Going back to the bunnies that need the animal resuscitation girl.
You know, I got these books when I was in fifth grade. I got School is Hell. You know, and I'm reading this guy, and it was such a leap forward from, Garfield and the Peanuts. But then you go full circle, and all of a sudden you're finding wisdom in Garfield and Peanuts. But
isn't that amazing?
It's just a weird, weird ladder to go from, you know, these little animated cartoons on the Tracy Ullman show to the longest running sitcom in television history. And then to have its spin-off Futurama, which is sort of like the graduate level course, seemingly, of, you know, his life's work. And I, to be honest with you, I never watched Futurama. It never appealed to me. It was just And I don't think I really watched too much TV once I got to college. And I don't know. It's one of those things that when you put it that way and you express that kind of story, immediately I want to go, oh God, I got to watch Futurama.
Well, but now, I think I just found the part of the episode. It's a minute long. If you guys are interested, I put it up there.
I bet a lot of people pray to you, huh?
Yes, but there are so many asking so much. After a while, you just sort of tune it out.
You know, I was God once.
Yes, I saw. You were doing well until everyone died.
It was awful. I tried helping them. I tried not helping them. But in the end, I couldn't do them any good. Do you think what I did was wrong?
Right and wrong are just words. What matters is what you do.
Yeah, I know. That's why I asked if what I did... Oh, forget it.
Bender, being God isn't easy. If you do too much, people get dependent on you. And if you do nothing, they lose hope. You have to use a light touch, like a safecracker or a pickpocket.
Or a guy who burns down a bar for the insurance money.
Yes, if you make it look like an electrical thing. When you do things right, people won't be sure you've done anything